Welcome to Gnostic Insights. My name is Dr. Sid Ropp, and I'm your host. Welcome back to Gnostic Insights. This week it's my great pleasure to have a guest named Tessa Lina. Tessa is a performance artist and musician in New York City. I sat down with her on the 8th of March, 2022, and interviewed her. That interview will be split up into two parts. This is part one, and next Sunday I'll run part two of that interview. I became familiar with Tessa Lina only very recently because of an editorial that Dr. Mercola reprinted of Tessa's, and the name of the article is called The Mind of a Technocrat, What Drives Them? And Tessa's observations about technocrats aligns very closely with my observations about archons and archonic activity and what the goal of the archons is. So I invited Tessa on to discuss that article. But as you'll hear during the next half hour, we didn't even touch on that article yet. We'll touch on it in next week's program. I found her a very interesting person to listen to. And I didn't interrupt with my usual restatements of Gnostic premises and whatnot. I thought, let's just let Tessa talk and we'll hear what we hear. Then next week, after next week's shows, I'll make any observations that may be necessary. I have to tell you, I have become a tremendous fan of you. I only discovered you because of that article that Mercola reprinted. And now I love Tessa Fights Robots. It's great.
Oh, thank you so much. It is so kind of you. Thank you.
What I'd like to talk about today, well, for one thing, as I read your essays, and I've read many of them by now, I agree with you. I agree with you right down the line. And that is very unusual for me to agree with people. So that's pretty cool to find a kindred spirit, I guess you'd say.
Thank you. Yay, camaraderie. It is very rare for me to agree with somebody on everything, too. So mutual admiration club.
Yeah, exactly. So, the thing that I contacted you about to talk to you was that article that Mercola reprinted for you, The Mind of a Technocrat, What Drives Them, because that's a good subject for us to talk about. But perhaps before we do, I'm very curious about your spiritual background, because I'm a very spiritual person. I'm a Gnostic, and I don't know if you consider yourself a Gnostic or a Christian or spiritual but not religious. What's your orientation to that kind of thing?
Well, it's a very, very in-depth question. I try, yes. I guess since I was a kid, it was important for me to understand, you know, what they call the meaning of life and all those things. So it has been I've been trying to figure it out. Not that I figured it out. It's probably impossible. It's an infinite process. But I was very focused on that.
Yeah.
And I tried different formal religions and it did not click. So now I guess, and I really tried. I mean, I really, really tried. It just did not, like there was something that was missing.
Yeah.
And I guess the word spiritual, although the word has been hijacked, you know, people use it left and right for all sorts of reasons. But
Right.
That thing, I mean, it's very important to me, and the word spiritual might explain it the best, but again, it's...
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you believe that there is a creator, a God above all gods? Do you believe in that sort of thing?
Well, I believe that, you know, there's a spirit world and creator, yes, and I think that people use different names and different belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And probably we all refer to the same fundamental arrangement of the universe. But no, people, what I've observed is that especially with organized religion, it has been used for good and for bad, and people tend to essentially, whatever they have on the inside, they express it through whatever system of belief that is available to them. So in the name of Christianity, for example, people can work with, you know, at the hospital or the charity in a good kind, or they could be a whole inquisitor and torture people. So it really depends on what's on the inside, and that emotion that people have on the inside, they then transfer to whatever they do in the name of whatever they say they believe in.
No, I agree. Of course I agree. So do you do anything to contact or to meditate or anything like that? Do you have any kind of rituals that put you in this transcendent type of state, or is it music? How do you stay connected to the numinescent?
Well, it's a lot of work. I suspect that it's probably a healthy state of a human being to constantly be in the state of connecting and trying to stay connected. So I just aspire to do it with everything I do, and to include the thought of being, you know, as well, true to, you know, whatever is important to me with everything I do, essentially, like mundane things, art, writing, everything.
All right. Well, but you have found no particular system that you have clicked with. Everybody, you see that everybody's doing, they're doing their best. Well, some of them are doing their best.
I mean, it's internal. I mean, like, it's one of those things that is very internal. It's just, you know, how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, it is obvious to me that you have a deeply rich Gnostic interior life, whether or not you know that, because I feel as though you must have a tremendous connection to the above, because you do such a good job of articulating what you see. And your heart is good. I think your heart is very good. And I just love you, Tessa. I think you're a remarkable woman. I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you. Just so kind of you. Well, big hugs through the screen.
Yeah, big hugs, big hugs. I suspect you and I actually have similar kind of emotional and psychological and spiritual quests throughout our entire lives. I just wound up at this Gnostic place because I ran across it about 10 years ago, kind of accidentally. So here I am, a Gnostic. So now I'm a Gnostic. And it's got a very big and complex system that goes along with it. So, by the way, what year did you come to the United States?
Oh, I've been here forever. I've been here for most of my adult life. So essentially, I know how to be an adult, a proper adult. In America, I don't really know how to be a proper adult in Russia anymore.
Yeah. Well, and the idea of how to be a proper citizen, a good citizen of America, my gosh, everything got thrown up and out the window, you know, in the last few years. So I'm not even sure politically how to come down on anything at this point, because all of my illusions are being popped one after the other. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, I'm a constitutionalist. I really do believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the system that was set up by the founders of America back in the 1700s. But that seems to be getting pulled down in a kind of anarchistic move at the moment. And I'm not sure that that's for the better. You know, it's part of the Great Reset. I'm not sure whether I should be resisting or just saying, well, politics is irrelevant. Do you have an opinion on that?
Oh, I have so many opinions on that.
Well, give me a few. That's a good thing.
Well, I think, I approach it philosophically, because I think that, you know, people are not very good at inventing good systems if they approach it as a system. Because let me start with an example of, you know, my original homeland, because it's, you know, it's easier and it's close to home, so it's easy to talk about it. So let's say, prior to the 11th century, people lived in a way that is considered like old way, traditional way, indigenous, pagan, you know, there are many words about it, nature-based. And it was, my understanding is, fairly harmonious. And people lived this way all over the globe. And then for political reasons, the leader at the time decided that people have to be more, quote-unquote, you know, civilized, right?
Yeah.
Politically, it was politically important. It was kind of keeping up with the Joneses in a national way. So he decided, okay, that old way is no good anymore. So we have to get a different organized religion. And so they got together and they were picking between different religions. They were picking between two types of Christianity and then Judaism and Islam. And based on a combination of aesthetical and political considerations, they ended up going with Eastern Christianity, which was kind of like, you know, random. If they chose differently, my people could have been any of those other things. So they picked Eastern Christianity, and then the leader said, okay, now everybody converts. People didn't want it. So it was a forced bloodshed type of conversion. So lots of knowledge, lots of traditions were eradicated, essentially, or they went underground, and then with centuries they got forgotten, right? So at that time, that Eastern Christianity was really a force of destruction. It was oppressive force. But then history is written by the winners, so it was rewritten as a like progress, civilization, you know, moving forward, whatever. And so then the centuries, as centuries came by, it kind of mellowed out and people put their inner beauty into that new thing that was given to them. So that Eastern Christianity in my old homeland, it gave birth to beauty and to art and to like all sorts of good emotion as well, right? As time came by, and there were many reforms, and again, not all peaceful, and cultural clashes of all sorts and political clashes, and then 1917 showed up, right, with Bolshevik Revolution. And at that point, the people who were running that particular coup said, okay, so religion is opium for the masses, no more religion, down with religion, destroy the churches, you know, shoot everybody. So they destroyed Christianity and other religions that, you know, people practiced on that land, and did so violently in the name of now the new progress was atheism. And for instance, in Moscow, there was a particular place, geographical spot, where prior to advent of, and I have to say like violent advent of Christianity, there was a pagan sacred place. Then when Christianity showed up, that sacred place was destroyed and they put a church in it, the same spot. Then when Bolsheviks showed up with their revolution, they destroyed the church and put a swimming pool into that. And then, of course, when the Soviet Union fell apart, then they said, okay, atheism was horrible, it was lame, it was bad. Now here we go again with religion. And so very conservative version of Christianity showed up where everybody would be like, your skirt is too short, like you're a horrible person, you're a sinner.
Yeah.
So actually very negative. But people were putting whatever, you know, whatever they had. They were fanatical atheists, they became fanatical Christians or any other religion, but Christianity was the most prominent. So they destroyed the swimming pool, and they put in a church in that same spot, a very gaudy kind of like intentionally expensive looking. But that's kind of just, if you look at it, not from the standpoint of this religion or that religion or, you know, this system or that system, it's kind of this human nature that, you know, that in spirit of, you know, domination in the words of my friend Stephen Newcomb, who is a wonderful native scholar, it's one human being coming onto others and saying, okay, so this thing that you have, it's bad, throw it out. I'm going to give you a better one and do what I say. And it keeps repeating throughout history in different places, in different variations. And it's just that same emotion that takes upon different wrappers, different colors, different flavors. It says, okay, this ism is better, or this system, or this religion, or this whatever. But people keep doing the same thing. It's whatever you're doing, you're not entitled to doing it your way, you have to do it my way.
Right.
And going back to your question, I think that, well, when Europeans came to the Americas, the people who lived here, they had very evolved cultures, civilizations, agriculture, spiritual practices, very, very evolved, very rich, very, very important and interesting and enriching. And so when Europeans showed up, they said, oh, they're all backward, they're all pagans, they're all like horrible. And there was a genocide. And on top of that, then they established another system that, okay, there was a genocide, it's true. Then with time, it mellowed out and those principles, people started putting their pure souls into that and say immigrants coming from Europe, especially the poor ones.
Yeah.
You know, who were horribly oppressed by their own governments, and then they were lured, oftentimes, if you look at the history of American immigration, not now, but in the early days, on many occasions, the poor people of Europe, the horribly oppressed people of Europe, were lured by those who wanted a supportive force on the American land, because even those property owners, slave owners, they could not really do anything by themselves. They needed an army, they needed people like of their own kind. So they were luring those poor oppressed people in Europe to come to America. But essentially, while those poor people in Europe had their own emotion driving them, they were oppressed, they were fleeing for freedom or for a better life or whatever. But here in the Americas, there were people living here, thank you very much. And to them, it was a bloodshed and an invasion and horribly oppressive and wrong and like existentially bad. So it's this, you know, it's not black and white. Mm-hmm. So what I think is happening right now is that it's almost like chicken coming home to roost. Mm-hmm. It's that tragedy, that violence and humiliation and indignity that was brought originally to the original people of the Americas. It's coming back to the people already living here, to the descendants of the ones who were doing it onto others. And the way I see it is not a moment of like punishment or like, here, we got you, and nothing like that. What the way I see it is a moment of recognition and saying like, wow, now they're taking our freedom from us, or they're trying to take our freedom from us. Maybe it was as wrong to take the freedom from those other people, because they were just like us. They were just free people minding their business, having their existence, doing whatever they wanted to do. So then somebody came and stole their freedom. So maybe it's a time for realization that we all have the right to have a personal relationship with the Creator and with the spirits, and do it in our whatever our hearts tells us, or whatever our ancestors tell us. Mm-hmm. And nobody has a business to tell others what to do about it. So my hope is that the people who feel very strongly about, say, the American Constitution and the freedoms, and I trust me, I really appreciate it, especially in these times when it's so crazy, but that those, you know, that kind of thinking connects to the fact that, but there was also genocide, genuinely, not as a talking point, political correctness, not, it was an attack on free people, on the on the actual freedom of people. And we have to somehow come to terms with that and realize that taking freedom from us is the same thing existentially as taking freedom from the original people of this land or anywhere, or from our own ancestors in Europe, like speaking for me, because my ancestors are from there. And we all are in this existential dance, and regardless of the differences in ethnicity, religion, practice, all those things, modern or old, we all are essentially, well, you call it the children of Creator, or whatever words people use for that. Right. But it's sacred. And just like it's wrong for the, you know, for Klaus Schwab and his crowd to try to convert us right now to transhumanism, it was equally wrong to convert the indigenous people into Christianity, because they didn't ask for it. And so I think maybe through pain that unfortunately is present in our lives right now, through this whole crazy fourth industrial revolution and reform that is inhumane and undignifying. So I'm hoping that it can result, hopefully in the kindest way, in some kind of a cathartic experience where people go like, the light bulb goes on. It's like, whoa, it's the same thing. It's like we are treated like the indigenous were treated before, and we don't like it. So maybe we have to come to some kind of common respect and ground and figure it out from here with new knowledge and new eyes.
Well, I agree with you. However, I'm wondering now, the people that are talking that talk, like, and who are in power, they're actually just in it for the power. They're talking the good talk, but I really don't think they have, you know, humble reckoning in mind. I think they really are just trying to knock us off of whatever we're doing so that they can come in and take power, whether it's religious or political or economic. all of this sort of thing. Let me just say, I'm mistrustful of people who call themselves progressives, because I think that the progressive ideal is beautiful. It's very paradisical. But I don't think that's what's really going on. We're not really trying to usher in paradise, are we? We're being forced into the technocratic box.
Oh, for right? sure. I think that, well, I think that in the heads of, say, the children who are very sincerely repeating slogans about, you know, equity and sustainability.
Yeah.
Changing yeah. all those things. They are just sincere kids. They're just, you know, kids are kids. Kids
right.
want to... To first of all, peer pressure, like being approved, being validated for kids is probably the number one priority. So yeah. whoever manages, and in this case, unfortunately, it's treacherous corporations and, you know, the investors.
Yeah.
So they have managed to manufacture this not really fake reality in which up and down and war and peace. And, you know, it's all the opposite of what they're saying it is. So they managed to label abuse as compassion. And such
yeah.
things. So,
yeah.
but the kids are going for that sincerely. But I think this
okay.
is a fairly representative trend because, like, for example, I was reading, and it just so happens, I worked with a Native American publication for many years. So I know a little bit about the history. And so I was reading even the diaries from, say, like high-level missionaries, like high-level militant missionaries in, mm-hmm. you know, a few centuries ago. They were not pretty. That was cruel, fairly, I mean, sociopathic, really. So, I mean, like, they
right.
took, they gleefully wrote about murder and rape and,
yeah.
you know, feeding people to the dogs and
yeah.
cutting limbs of babies. I mean, like, it's like classic like psychopathy.
Yeah.
But for them, it was wrapped in this ideology, which is why I really pay very little attention to ideologies, because I think people use, again, if they are psychopaths, they will use anything to be a
right.
psychopath.
Right.
Atheism, Christianity, Islam, whatever. They mean like they will use whatever words they can use to tempt people to, you know, be violent. And likewise for good. People, if they have this good, loving energy in their side, they can use anything. So.
Right. As a matter of fact, that seems to be your base belief is love, huh? You believe in love.
Well, I think it's the base of our entire existence, really, if we... you know, dig deep enough. That's
so just drop the associations, drop the isms, just exist as loving each person as you come across them. Is that kind of the way it works?
I think so. And also, you know, words are tricky because, you know, even the word love is used right now in the upside down manner where
yes.
like wear a mask because you love your grandma.
Oh, yeah.
And, like
right.
completely upside down, right?
Right, right.
So I think it's more of a feeling. Like, for example, I like to use this analogy sometimes. It's, you know, sometimes they talk when astronauts go out of space and they suddenly look at the planet from
yeah.
up there and they're
yeah.
felt and they're filled with this sudden understanding of connectedness and
yeah.
oneness and love. I
right.
think it is really a feeling, but it's also a feeling that you have to constantly work to maintain. And
yeah.
at some point when you realize how, I mean, really how fragile everything is, and even the worst atrocities happening right now, say in a million of years, at some point there will be no Earth, just by natural reasons. I mean, it could be, you know, hundreds of millions of years, whenever it takes.
Yeah.
Like, but at some point, whatever we have right now, gone, like gone for good, gone. So, and in that sense, every detail that is happening, even the things that are sad and bad and wrong, even so, it's like there's some beauty in it, right? Like this transient nature of it and the
mm-hmm.
potential for love. And even the people who are okay, let me set aside a very small group of actual psychopaths. I mean, they are
okay.
serving their own role. They're predators. They have a social
yeah.
function.
They are
so that we don't fall asleep. But besides them, they're very few. Most people, even the ones who are doing things that are cruel sometimes.
Yeah.
It's usually confusion, ignorance, some kind of just like polluted state of mind.
Right.
And but somewhere deep in there, there's love. So, I mean, they're completely,
yes.
completely messed up. And by the way, There's an opinion that I tend to believe that it's probably true. When they talk about even the things we just discussed, colonization, invasion, all those things, perhaps, and I tend to believe that perhaps the people who came to the lands populated by people who were still practicing the old ways, perhaps they were seeking to remember something that they forgot, that in their life was completely destroyed.
Yeah, right. The information goes both ways. Some of the essential paganism would have washed back onto those cruel religious types, although they didn't admit it, but it probably did touch their souls.
Yeah, perhaps. And perhaps because their own old knowledge was so thoroughly eradicated and the whole sensory richness that it created was also eradicated. So on the subconscious level, perhaps they were seeking to reconnect with nature and to reconnect, but they didn't know how. They were, you know, they were so broken that when they showed up, they created havoc because that's all they knew how to do. Yeah. So it's all very tricky, very, very tricky.
Yeah, and so our unrest that's going on right now in the United States, the unhappiness, the riots, the pulling down statues, the burning things, it's the same phenomenon, isn't it? That people are trying to overturn the cruelty, yet they're not really practicing love necessarily. I mean, their faces are so angry and hateful in general, but that's just the delusion. That's the artificial separation between everybody, I think.
Probably, plus the political forces, they love to breed division. And I think it is without a doubt on purpose, because they're talking about things in terms of coming from the, you know, political correctness and all that, which I think is fairly toxic. But so they are using the actual tragedy and the actual pain, but instead of trying to invoke healing or genuine resolutions, because like God knows there has been plenty of really bad and dark things in American history. I mean, like, it's true, but instead of saying, okay, so how, for example, they're not actually offering to uphold the treaties with Native nations, which, by the way, are completely broken. They have legal power. They're completely broken to this day. But the people who are bringing the hatred and the, I mean, they're not saying let's uphold the treaties. They're saying let's hate the whatever.
And
it is a dead end solution. It's not a solution. And I think they're doing it on purpose so that everybody just fights and it's stealing energy from one group and giving it to another temporarily. They're going to toss everybody out. But they're it's such a mess.
Yeah. Totally. It's like anthills being stirred up with a stick. And that stick is the propaganda and the power brokers just keeping us running around and not in love. That is true. Because what, you know, this whole, all the lockdowns and the mandates, I'm a very much a freedom loving person. And the idea of a mandate is just goes completely against my grain. I do not abide by you have to do this is. And so that makes me angry rather than loving. I mean, it's hard for me to remember to stay loving. And by the way, you had an essay this week called Imperfect People Peddling Towards Happiness, which I found very meaningful because it reminds me that, you know, we try to make things beautiful, but we are simply unsuccessful. And it's not necessarily out of bad intent. Does it make you angry? Do you not feel anger at people who are obviously succumbing to fear and propaganda?
I don't know if it is anger. Occasionally I feel irritated, but it's not my primary feeling. Like, for example, right now I feel kind of numb because they just lifted the mandate in New York yesterday. They and some restaurants are still having the signs, you know, that they require.
They're going to keep them.
They require the medical thing. And I feel like, oh, like, thank you, my lords. You gave me my freedoms back. How generous of you. And I just feel like after all those months of segregation and abuse, it's like, I don't even care. I don't mean, like, I don't even want to go there. And I mean, like, that's a very strange feeling. I mean, they just walked all over people. And they're like, yay, you can come to the restaurant again. Welcome back. Oh, they don't say welcome back. It's just kind of like, okay, you're good now.
And
it's so vicious on some level. But I think also that it's just the state of the world that people, you know, like people are imperfect. And obviously myself included. And we learn in our own ways. And I guess after having made mistakes, like enough mistakes, and, you know, taken time to figure certain things out, and obviously still figuring things out, it's just some kind of patience shows up.
Yeah.
And it's like you realize that, okay, like not everything is in my control. I mean, I can do things, and I'm obliged to do things as far as, you know, doing my art, to trying to be the best version of myself in my own life. This is all I can do. I mean, literally, this is all I can do. And then the rest is up to, you know, God,
universe,
nature, whatever. Again, people use many words to describe it. But I can do my part. That's my job. Other things are not my job. I can have opinions about it.
Right.
But it's pointless, because I can drive myself crazy thinking about how I can't fix it, because I can't fix it. And, like, hopefully with time, over generations, hopefully sooner, it'll come to terms, but, you know, we'll see.
Well, that's part one of my interview with Tessa Lina. Her website is known as Tessa Fights Robots, and that's spelled T-E-S-S-A Fights Robots. You can look that up online. Meanwhile, before we go, let me read to you from one of Tessa's poems. It's called A Prayer for the Imperfect by Tessa Lina. May all of us, imperfect as we are, be met with love. May we forgive ourselves for all our mistakes and all the injustices done to us. And may we embrace it that in our adulthood we are authorized to fix what we no longer like, and do so from the heart, with passion, as creators and dignified participants of this world. May we remember that the universe wants our dignity, our love, and our courage, not our withdrawal or guilt. May we remember that we are authorized to leave behind other people's helpless trash this very second, and that the point has always been teaching us a skill, not making us hurt and molded by the world. May we realize that we are good. May we realize that we don't have any obligation to dance with the wound any longer, but instead we can honor our spirit and turn all the imperfections into awe and joy. We have suffered enough. It's time to straighten out our souls and celebrate our heart. May all the fear retreat. May we remember that love has a mysterious power to heal if we insist on it and weather the storms with courage and patience. May we forgive the ones who hurt us out of stupidity or fear. May we forgive the ones who are slow to understand. May we remember the world in which it's legal to enjoy the sweetness without guilt, and where the expected payment is honor and gratitude. May the sweet things find us, and may we have the humility to accept them. Let it be so. That was by Tessa Lina. It's a lovely prayer. So take that forward with you this week, and we'll hear some more again next week. Onward and upward. And God bless.